This podcast is a member of the New York City Podcast Network at nycpodcastnetwork.com. Visit us to listen to over 250 amazing podcasts just like this one.
Japanese street style is some of the cutest and trendiest clothing in the world. Introducing Cherry Goddess Women's Clothing and Accessories, the hottest original and cute clothing company. We offer tops, clothes, accessories, shoes, dresses and skirts, and comfortable homeware that we guarantee you will love. Cherry Goddess Women's Clothing, super cute Japanese style clothing.
This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. Thank you for listening to today's episode of my podcast. Today, I am going to be talking about Sarah Bartman and the character trope that the feminists call the Venus. But before we get started, I have a song from the podcast safe directory of the New York City Podcast Network. His name is Brett Nybo, and the song is called The Bounce. Thank you, and I will get back to you after this short song break.
Bounce, bounce, bounce. Let's bounce.
Bounce. Let's bounce. Let's bounce.
This is Black Wall Street Chronicles. I'm your host, Jeffrey Frazier. And that song was from the podcast Safe Directory of the New York City Podcast Network. Brett Nybo called The Bounce. It's a great song, has a nice jump to it. So, let's get right to it. I'm going to tell you who Sarah Bartman was. Sarah Bartman, also spelled Sarah, sometimes in the diminutive from Sarti and Bartman, was a Khoi Khoi woman who was exhibited as a freak show attraction in the 19th century Europe under the name Hottentot Venus, a name which was later attributed to at least one other woman similarly exhibited. The women were exhibited for their stereotypic body type uncommon in Western Europe, which not only was perceived as a curiosity at the time, but became subject of scientific interest as well as erotic projection. Venus is sometimes used to design representations of the female body in arts and cultural anthropology, referring to the Roman goddess of love and fertility. Hottentot was a colonial era term for the indigenous Khoi Khoi people of Southwest Africa, now usually considered an offensive term. The Sarah Bartman story is often regarded as the epitome of racist colonial exploitation and the commodification of the humanization of black people. Early life in the Cape Colony. Miss Bartman was born to a Khoi Khoi family in the vicinity of Kembabu, what is now the Eastern Cape of South Africa. Her birth name is unknown, but is thought by some to be Binsihira, supposedly closest to given her name. Sudity is a diminutive form of Sarah in the Cape Dutch. The use of the diminutive form commonly indicated familiarity, endearment, or contempt. Her surname has also been spelled Bartman and Bartman. She was an infant when her mother died, and her father was later killed by bushmen while driving cattle. Bartman spent her childhood and teenage years on Dutch European farms. She went through puberty rites and kept a small tortoise-shell necklace, most likely given to her by her mother, until her death in France. In the 1790s, a free back, a designation for individual enslaved descent trader named Peter Caesars, met her and encouraged her to move to Cape Town. Records do not show whether she was made to leave, went willingly, or was sent by her family to Caesars. She lived in Cape Town for at least 2 years, working in households as a washerwoman and a nursemaid for Peter Caesars, then in the house of a Dutchman in Cape Town. She finally moved to a wet nurse in the household of Peter Caesars' brother, Hendrik Caesars, outside of Cape Town in the present-day Woodstock. There's evidence that she had two children, though both died as babies. She had a relationship with a poor Dutch soldier, Hendrik van Dongen, who lived in Hut Bay near Cape Town, but the relationship ended when his regiment left the Cape. Hendrik Caesars began to show her at the city hospital in exchange for cash, where Surgeon Alexander Dunlop, a Scottish military surgeon in Cape Slave Lodge, operated a side business in supplying showmen in Britain with animal specimens, and suggested she travel to Europe to make money by exhibiting herself. Bartman refused, Dunlop persistent, and Bartman said she would not go unless Hendrik Caesars came too. He also refused, but he finally agreed in 1810 to go to Britain to make money by putting Bartman on stage. The party left for London in 1810. It is unknown whether Bartman went willingly or was forced. Dunlop was the front man and conspirator behind the plan to exhibit Bartman. According to a British legal report of November 26, 1810, an affidavit supplied to the Court of King's Bench from a Mr. Bullock, a Liverpool museum, stated, "Some months since Mr. Alexander Dunlop, he believed was again called Mr. Bullock, and told him that he had then went on her way to the Cape, a female Hottentot of very signal appearance, that she would make the fortune of any person who showed her in London, and that he, Dunlop, was under the engagement to send her back 2 years. Lord Carvedon, governor of the Cape, gave permission for the trip, but later said regretted it, and he fully learned the purpose of the trip. On display in Europe, Hendrick Caesars and Alexander Dunlop brought Bartman in London in 1810. The group lived together in Duke Street, St. James, the most expensive part of London. In the household were Sarah Bartman, Hendrick Caesars, Alexander Dunlop, and two African boys, probably bought illegally by Dunlop for the Save Lodge in Cape Town. Dunlop had Bartman exhibit and Caesar was the showman. Dunlop exhibited Bartman in the Egyptian room at the London residence of Thomas Hope, number 10 at Duchess Street, Cavendish Square, London. Dunlop thought he could make money because of Londoners' lack of familiarity with Africans and because of Bartman's prerogative perceived large buttocks. Craig and Scully say people came to see her because they saw her not as a person, but a pure example of one part of the natural world. She became as the Hottentot Venus, and was at least one other woman in 1829. A handwritten note made by the exposition flyer by someone who saw Bartman in London in January 1811 indicates curiosity about her origins and probably reproduced some of the language from the exposition. Thus, the following origin story should be treated with skepticism. Sargi is 22 years old, 4 feet 10 inch high, and has, for a Hottentot, a cook capacity. She lived in the occupation of cook at the Cape of Good Hope. Her country is not less than 600 miles from the Cape, the inhabitants of which are rich in cattle and sell them for a mere trifle. Bottle of brandy or a small roll of tobacco with purchased severed sheep. Their principal trade is in cattle skins or tallow. Beyond this nation is other of small stature, very subtle and fierce. The Dutch could not bring them under subjection, and shot them whenever they found them. January 9, 1811. The tradition of freak shows was still established in Europe at the time, and historians have argued that this is first how Bartman was displayed. Bartman never allowed herself to be exhibited nude, and her account of her appearance in London in 1810 makes it clear that she was wearing a garment, albeit a tight-fitted one. She became a subject of scientific interest, albeit a racist bias frequently, as well as erotic projection. She was marketed as the missing link between man and beast. That's disgusting. Exhibition in London just a few years after the passing of the 1807 Slave Trade Act, which abolished the slave trade, created a scandal. A British abolished society, the African Association, conducted a newspaper campaign for her release. The British abolitionist Zachary Macaulay led the protest, with Hendrick Caesars protesting in response that Bartman was entitled to earn a living, stating, "Has she not as good a right to exhibit herself as an Irish giant or a dwarf?" Caesars was comparing Bartman to the contemporary Irish giants Clarence Bang and Patrick Carter O'Brien. Macaulay and the African Association took the matter to court on November 24, 1810. At the Court of King's Bench, the Attorney General began the attempt to give her liberty to say what she was exhibited by her own consent. In support, he produced two affidavits in court. The first from a Willem Bullock of Liverpool Museum, who's intended to show that Bartman has been brought to Britain by individuals who referred her as she was property. The second, the Secretary of the African Association, described degrading conditions under which she was exhibited and also gave evidence of coercion. Bartman was then questioned before an attorney in Dutch, in which she was fluent via interpreters. Historians have subsequently stated doubts on the veracity and the independence of the statement that Bartman then made. She said that she, in fact, understood perfectly that she was guaranteed half of the profits. The case was therefore dismissed. She was questioned for 3 hours. The statement directly contradicts accounts of her exhibitions made by Zachary McCauley and of the African Institution and other eyewitnesses. A written contract was produced, which is considered by some modern comments to be a legal subterfuge. Historians have subsequently stated doubts on the veracity and independent. Hold on. I'm reading the same thing. The publicity given by the court case increased Bartman's popularity as an exhibit. She later toured other parts of England, and it was exhibited at a fair in Limerick, Ireland in 1812. She was also exhibited by the fair at Bury St. Edmunds in Suffolk. On December 1, 1811, Bartman was baptized in Manchester Cathedral. There's evidence that she got married on the same day. A man called Henry Taylor took Bartman to France around September 1814. Taylor then sold her to a man sometimes reported as an animal trainer, St. Rux, but whose name actually was John Rux and belonged to a ballot master who had been deported from the Cape Colony for seditious behavior. Rux exhibited her on mother pressure conditions for 15 months at the Palais Royal in France. In France, she was in effect enslaved. In Paris, her exhibition became more clearly entangled with scientific racism. French scientists were curious about where she had the elongated labia, which earlier naturalists such as Francis Laval had purposely averred and calls it at the Cape. French naturalists, among the George Covell, head of keeper of the Méningier at the Muséum National d'Histoire Naturelle and founder of the discipline of comparative anatomy, visit her. She was the subject of several scientific paintings at the Jean Diderot, where she was examined in March 1815. As naturalists Etienne Giffroy, Saint-Hilaire, and Friedrich Covell, a younger brother of George, reported, she was obliging enough to undress and allow herself to be painted in a nude. This was not true. Although by his standards she appeared to be naked, she wore a strong apron-like garment which concealed the genitalia throughout these sessions, in accordance with her own cultural norms of modesty. She steadfastly refused to remove it even when she was offered money by one of the attendant scientists. She was brought out as an exhibit at wealthy people's parties and private salons. In Paris, Bartman's promoters did not need to concern themselves with slavery changes, crazed as Scully state. By the time she got to Paris, her existence was really quite miserable and extraordinarily poor. Sarah was literally treated like an animal. There was some evidence to the extent at one point a collar was placed around her neck, and at the end of her life she was prostitute and penniless. Death and aftermath. Bartman died on 29th of December 1815 at around 26 of an internment inflammatory and malignant, possibly smallpox, which others suggest that she contracted syphilis or pneumonia. Cover abducted a decession but no autopsy to inquire into the reasons for Bartman's death. The French autonomist Henri Marie de Cray de Benville published notes on the dissection in 1816, which were republished by George Covell in the Memoirs du Muséum d'Histoire Naturelle in 1817. Covell, who had met Bartman, notes in his monograph that it is subject with an intelligent woman with an excellent memory, particularly for faces. In addition to his native tongue, she spoke fluent Dutch, passable English, and a smattering of French. He describes his soldiers, his back as graceful, arms slender, hands and feet as charming and pretty. He adds that she was adept at playing the Jew's harp, could dance according to the traditions of her country, and had a lively personality. Despite this, Covell interpreted her mane in accordance with his theories of racial evolution as evidenced ape-like traits.
He thought her small ears were similar to those of an orangutan and also compared her vivus when alive to the quickness of a monkey. He was part of a movement of scientists were aiming to codify a hierarchy of races with the white man on top. Symbolism. Sarah Bartman was not the only color coded to be taken from her homeland. The story sometimes is used to illustrate social and political strains, and through this, some facts have been lost. Dr. Yvette Abrams, professor of women and gender studies at the University of Western Cape, writes, "We lack academic studies that view Sarah Bartman as anything other than a symbol. The story becomes marginalized, as it is always used to illustrate some other topic. Bartman is used to represent African discrimination and suffering in the West, although there were many other colored people who were taken to Europe." Historian Neil Parsons writes of two colored children, 13 and 6 years old respectively, who were taken from South Africa and displayed at a holiday fair in Elberfeld, Prussia in 1845. Bozeman's, a traveling show that two colored men, woman and a baby, toured Britain, Ireland, and France from 1846 to 1855. P.T. Barnum's show Little People advertised a 16-year-old Koli girl named Florida as the missing link and acquired six more children later. Bartman's tale may be better known because she was the first colored taken from her homeland, or because of the extensive exploitation and examination of her body by scientists such as George Clover and Adamus and the public wellness treatment she received during her lifetime. She was brought to the West for exaggerated female form, and the European public developed an obsession with her reproductive organs. Her body parts were on display at Muscadet Home for 150 years, sparking awareness and sympathy in the public eye. Although Bartman was the first colored to land in Europe, much of her story has been lost, and she is defined by her exploitation in the West. Her body was used as a foundation for science. June and Joseph Versa used Sarah Bartman's public image to validate tuberculosis. In his essay, Dictionnaire des Sciences Médicales, Dictionary of Medical Sciences, he summarizes the true nature of the black female within the framework of accepted medical discourse. Ferrari focused on identifying her sexual organs as a more developed and distinct in comparison to white female organs, as his theories regarding sexual primitivism are influenced and supported by the anatomical studies and illustrations of Sarah Bartman, which was created by George Clover. It has been suggested by anthropologists that this body type was once more widespread in humans, based on the carvings and female forms dating to the Paleolithic era, which is collectively known as Venus figurines, also referred as the Steno-European Venuses. Yeah, that's terrible and actually very daunting that this happened to Sarah Bartman. So, we're going to take a quick break. You're going to listen to music that comes from the podcast directory of the New York City Podcast Network. The song is called What a Girl Wants, and it's by a nice independent artist by the name of Ja Fares. After you take this musical short break, I'll get back to you.
What a girl wants, what a girl needs.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on my Christina Aguilera vibe on this one. Working 9 to 5, then work from 5 to 9. Can't even lie, I just want my wine. I just wanna get high. I just wanna be fly. Just want my guy right by my side. Crank the music up and drive, drive. You please me, I please you. It's a simple thing, it's game for two. You treat me, I treat you. Put it on me, I put it on you. Please me, treat me, treat me. It's so easy, let the games begin. Give love, get love, it's a win-win. What a girl wants, what a girl needs. Her bag, her drink, or her trees. And a guy that brings all the grabbing and passion between the sheets. Tell her what you want. A guy who brings me to my knees. I guarantee bringing me my knees will bring me to my knees. My, oh my, oh my. You're not worth my dime. If you don't bring peace, run around town making sounds on your leads. Don't you worry about me. I got it down to a T. I aim to please. Come with that heat. I'm a tasty treat. You please me, I please you. It's a simple thing, it's game for two. You treat me, I treat you. Put it on me, I put it on you. Please me, treat me, treat me. It's so easy, let the games begin. Give love, get love, it's a win-win. What a girl wants, what a girl needs. A bag, a drink, or her trees. And a guy that brings all the grabbing and passion between the sheets. Tell me what you want. A guy who brings me to my knees. I guarantee bringing me my knees will bring me to my knees. What a girl wants, what a girl needs. And a guy that brings all the grabbing and passion between the sheets.
Tell her what you want.
A guy who brings me to my knees. I guarantee bringing me my knees will bring me to my knees. To be with a boss, give me what I need to bring me to my needs. This is what it costs to be with a boss. Give me what I need to bring me to my needs.
What a girl wants, what a girl needs.
A bag,
what a girl needs.
A dream, if it ain't that bag, that brings all the grabbing and passion between the sheets. Tell me what you want. A guy who brings me to my needs.
What a girl wants, what a girl needs.
A bag, a drink, a treat.
Make me happy,
happy, happy,
and set me free.
Tell me what you want. A guy who brings me to my knees. I guarantee bringing me my knees will bring me to my knees.
This is Black Wall Street Chronicles, and we're back at it again. That song was called What a Girl Wants by Jai Fierce. It's a great song. She's a great artist. You should look her up on Spotify and all platforms of streaming music. So, early I was talking about Sarah Bartman and about exploitation and how does it connect to the Venus character trope that's in the entertainment industry. Well, Venus is the Roman goddess of love. And any woman that has a Venus has basically an hourglass figure. They have a big breast and big butt. They're basically in the shape of they have a very curvaceous shape. They're heavy on top, sometimes they're heavy on bottom, and they have a slim waist. Now, the thing is, in corporate America, women like that may have a problem because, you know, you have these people in court. We're in the post-hashtag Me Too movement, and people in corporate America still see women who has curvaceous figures as sex objects, and because they are very attractive, you know, we have that misogynist that thinks that the only reason why that attractive woman is coming up in corporate America is a form of quid pro quo sexual harassment. Quid pro quo sexual harassment means where a person has to trade sexual favors for money or a higher position in the workplace. You know, there's a couple of women in corporate America, in Washington, D.C., Wall Street, and in Hollywood that's a victim of that. Now, the entertainment industry is a little different. Sexism still happens. Saw what happened with the accusations of Harvey Weinstein and Dr. Cosby. We saw what happened with Jeffrey Epstein, and we see what happened with Mr. Robert Sylvester Kelly and how Russell Simmons had to end all his businesses and he had to go across the seas. Yeah, so even though they're a woman who was able to commodify their Venus shapes and they was able to make money. For example, we'll start with white women. We could talk about Marilyn Monroe. Okay. Marilyn Monroe broke two character tropes. She was successful as a 40-year-old actress, which is rare in Hollywood. And at the time, she was the highest paid actor in Hollywood. So she subverted the character tropes in Hollywood because it's believed that women over the age of 30 is not able to get movie roles and women do not receive the same pay as men. There's other women that fit the Venus character trope, you know, white woman, like Dame Helen Mirren in the 1970s, you know. Dame Helen Mirren is a great actress, but in the 1970s, she looked like a pinup model. She was very attractive. You have women like Madonna. You have women like Pamela Anderson. You have women like... that show Showgirls, Elizabeth Berkley, that tall white woman who was on Saved by the Bell, who's married to that fashion designer. It's not Elizabeth Hurley, she has another name. Damn, I'm drawing a blank. It should be more. Who's another? Oh, you have Kate Upton. You have... You have Charlize Theron. You have Angelina Jolie. You got Jennifer Lawrence in a recent movie, R-rated comedy that's loosely about sex work. You know, there's many women in Hollywood that use the Venus character trope. Now let's talk about black women. You know, Beyonce has used the Venus character trope. Adina Howard has used the Venus character trope. Janet Jackson. Pam Grier. We got these new artists, these young women who are coming up, like Chloe Bailey and... Why? Chloe Bailey's not the other one. Who's that lady who sings real good that's a stripper? What's her name? She's married to that boy whose father was a drug dealer and he's on the 50 Cent show. What's his name? Hold on, let me get her name. Whatever. 50 Cent. I can't think. You guys are probably going to know who the name is. Let me think off the top of my head. Who else had the Venus? Oh, if you look on Instagram, there's a whole bunch of Venuses. You have Amber Rose. You have... Angela White, formerly known as Blac Chyna. You have Brittany Renner. You have Kim Kardashian and all of her sisters. Like, all of them, you could say they have the Venus character trope. They're all Venuses. Yeah. The sad thing is that, you know, these women are sexually objectifying themselves. I mean, hoping they make money. You know, according to feminist theory, women who utilize the Venus character trope is basically commodifying the male gaze and making money off of men paying attention to them. It is real hypocrisy, because the same men will say that these OnlyFans women, you know, the only chicks on OnlyFans.com is also Venuses. How these women are OnlyFans, you spending money, you saying that, you know, all these OnlyFans.com is loose and they're not good women, but you're going on the internet behind closed doors and you're paying to look at their pictures. So, you know, a lot of these men are real hypocrites. So, thank you for listening to my podcast. I hope all of you men and women look into the Venus character trope and read up on Sarah Bartman, because it's a great story about exploitation.